Bathrooms, piers, broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, the April 25th, 2002 show. That was, of course, the city-famous Just Kiddin' fine band doing songs that have to do with real social issues that interest me. That, of course, was Phil Free, and it was Mayor's Lawn. And Christopher Crone, being a landlord, might be able to let us sleep on some of his properties. You never can tell. That's our Mayor Christopher Crone. I don't really want to say Fuhrer Crone, because he seems to be taking his direction from other council members, such as former Fuhrer Fitzmaurice. But he is indeed the nominal mayor, and we should give him the respect of that title.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
When it comes to sleeping on the mayor's lawn, I really think he'd understand, seeing how he's a trespasser himself.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, he got a little of the shaft in the Sentinel and for his city council,
I gotta go now.
Okay. Just can't keep you on the line, I guess, but thank you for the call, caller. Yeah, the caller, of course, is referring to the case of Carol Herbert, who wanted to have a tree removed, was getting some flack from the city, some concerns from environmentalists, and apparently had some concerns that she felt Mayor Crone was trespassing on her property. My concern in that situation was not so much that, but rather that she was essentially cut off and interrupted at city council in a fashion that I myself and others have felt, in the way that they cut short the public process if any kind of embarrassment to city council officials seems in the offing. And that happened to compliments of council member Sugar at the council meeting that just came up, actually. No, it was the one before, the one that just came up, the first council meeting in April. And indeed, we talked about that not only on this station, but I was invited to talk about my Heil Crone lawsuit case on KSCO, and the compliments of talk show host Steve Hartman. And indeed, I may actually call him on the air today to try to get his latest updates on other people who've had concerns with city council who may not come from the left or from the sort of homeless rights side of the spectrum, but from another side. I think that everyone is entitled to be treated with respect at city council in the sense that they should be allowed their time to speak. They should not be cut off. They should not be denied their First Amendment rights. Respect, however, does not mean that you have to genuflect and kiss the ground in front of city council members and officials. Quite the contrary. City officials put themselves up there. They get highly paid, some of them. I'm talking about the staff now more than the elected officials, but they are in the firing line. They choose to be in the firing line, and they have no business trying to eject and suppress the First Amendment rights of the public because they're embarrassed or they find it awkward what is being said. And that is, of course, what has happened repeatedly over the last 3 years of the city council. So that's why the federal lawsuit, plus, of course, the arrogant stance that the city council took when it just decided that the silent gesture from me on March 12th was sufficient to have me arrested, taken away in handcuffs, and held for 5.5 hours and charged with a misdemeanor. You cannot, if the citizens are quiet when that happens, then they can do whatever they want at the city council and shut down whoever they want, whenever they want, without any kind of real cost to them or a response. And there has to be that kind of response. That's why I'm really trying to get all of you out there who have seen any kind of city council abuses in terms of the way they treat people at the council, the way they treat people holding signs or trying to tape record or trying to simply have their turn at the mic or even saying something from the audience. Brief comments from the audience that are expressions of opinion do not disrupt a council meeting. They may ruffle a Fuhrer Fitzmaurice's feathers, yes, but that's a problem he has, and one he cannot lawfully impose on the rest of us. But of course, he has unlawfully been doing that with the collusion of the police force and the city council, and Krohn is continuing to do the same thing. He continues to violate the Constitution, and if you want more technically, the Brown Act, the law that allows us specifically the right to come to council meetings, the right to have a time to speak, the right to be there speaking without censorship of the content of what we're saying, provided we're talking on the topic, the right to know what is going to be discussed by the city council. All these things are important issues. Unfortunately, not because we have any real input into city council, even if they were letter perfect around the Brown Act and the First Amendment as the law stands and our current city council practices stand, we wouldn't, those of us who are concerned, for example, with community control of police, ending the sleeping ban, restoring civil rights to homeless people, wouldn't have a Ice Cube's chance in hell of getting on the city council agenda, either now or with the likely lineup of the next city council, unless there's some significant changes in the power structure of the city, because we don't have agenda access. But nonetheless, it is an important thing on principle to fight, and it is important clarity because it shows the hypocrisy of a city council that claims to be progressive, and it shows the sad apathy of a city that claims to be progressive. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Hank Milstein.
Hey there, Hank. I talked to you earlier today. You are engaged in a shindig coming up on May 1st, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, indeed. It's the May Day Festival and Picnic, and it's happening on May 1st, on May Day, from 4 to 7 p.m. in Laurel Park, which is the little park behind Loudon Nelson Center.
Mm-hmm. 4 o'clock to 7 in the evening, and the public is invited.
Absolutely, and it's free of charge.
Mm-hmm.
And
what kind of subjects are we going to be hearing from speakers?
Well, actually, we're going to be hearing a whole bunch of things. This is, we've got talks, we've got music, we've got poetry, we've even got a little theater. So we're going to be hearing, in terms of talks, we're going to be hearing from you
mm-hmm.
At 4:10, and then around 4:35, we're going to be hearing from Jim Cosner,
mm-hmm.
Who's known to people here, and 5 o'clock, we're going to be hearing Nora Hockman of SEIU, the Service Employees International Union. She's the co-chair of the Santa Cruz County Coalition for a Living Wage, and she'll be talking on that struggle and the victories in that struggle. We'll be having Joe Williams from the Santa Cruz Peace Coalition talking about the peace struggle. And at 6:25 or 6:30, we'll be having Scott Kennedy, who is a city council person and has just returned from, or is just going to be, have returned from Palestine and Israel, and we'll be talking, of course, about the struggle there.
Mm-hmm. You know,
so
Scott,
we've got quite a lineup of speakers. We've also got a whole bunch of musicians.
Hank, you don't know if Scott is planning to introduce a resolution around the issue of Palestine and Israel. I know that Berkeley resolution came up on Tuesday that was turned down by the Berkeley City Council that asked there be a complete boycott of both Israel and Palestine until there was a settlement there. Any inklings from Scott on that one?
Well, that's very interesting. I have not heard anything about that, so I really don't know at this point. We may hear from Scott when he gets back.
Now, will there be an open mic at all, or is this pretty much you get to listen to
well, Actually, you know, we've got so many people coming that I don't think it's going to be an open mic, but I think it's going to be an informal event, so there'll be plenty of opportunity for people to kind of mill about and talk with people. There's also going to be food where it's a picnic, essentially, and we're having food, not bombs, and they're going to come and, give out free food, essentially, mm-hmm. and we're also inviting people to, if they wish, to come and bring food and share food, whatever. It's a family event. There is also going to be a table for children's art.
Uh-huh. And so, that's the part right next to
something for everybody here.
Next to a playground, so kids will have a place to go.
That's right. Yeah, there's a playground in that park.
You can't
too.
Go into the playground unless you are with a kid, as I understand it. That's uh-huh. the rule on the playground.
Okay.
So May Day is, of course, a traditional day of labor solidarity. Do you want to say anything about that?
Yeah. Well, I'll be talking about that a little bit more on the day around 6 o'clock, giving some of the history and background to it. But briefly, it emerged out of the struggle for an eight-hour day.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the late 19th century, and in 1886, there was a labor rally for the eight-hour day in Chicago.
At the Haymarket, right?
Yes, the Haymarket massacre, and there was a bomb, and several people got killed, and some labor leaders were falsely accused, were framed on charges of having planted the bomb. And some of them were hanged, one committed suicide, some of them were imprisoned for quite a number of years, and then they were exonerated and released by a progressive governor, Peter Altgeld, in the 1890s. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, the international working class movement declared May 1st to be a day of commemoration of labor and a day of solidarity. So May Day is really a holiday made in America, and this is something that people often don't realize. You know, it was in the Cold War era, it was, you know, the something the Reds had created and, you know, were trying to impose on this country, but really it's very much an American holiday. It was celebrated as the American Labor Day, until about the 1930s when, partly as a result of anti-communism, it was decided by the powers that be that they should try to move Labor Day to September. So now we, in effect, have two Labor Days in this country, which is fine. We've got May Day. We also have the first weekend in September, Labor Day.
Mm-hmm. So again, this is on Wednesday, May 1st, from 4 to 7?
That's right, yes.
Loudon Park.
Right,
or Laurel
Park behind Loudon Nelson Center.
And there is sometimes trouble parking if you have one of those big gas-guzzling vehicles with you like I do.
Well, actually, we're going to try to see to it that there's parking space available.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try to arrange things so that our people are not parking in the immediate area. And there is actually a fair amount of parking around there. I know it is a pain. It's a good reason to come down on a bike, but there is actually, when I've gone there, I have managed to find parking.
And do you need any assistance with the organizing of the event or the cleanup? Are there anything
well,
people can
will
do to
certainly,
help?
You know, we will certainly welcome help, particularly with the cleanup, but starting around 7 or a little after, because we've got to get the park all, you know, cleaned up by sundown.
It is illegal to be in the park after dark.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah, mm-hmm. Don't be in the park after dark.
Uh-huh.
So we want to get everything all cleaned up.
That's a Kennedy passed law, but I won't get into that at this
yeah,
time.
Yeah, right, right. So, I don't think Scott Kennedy's going to be speaking about that. Maybe you can address that.
Well, let's hope that none of us get arrested under that.
Right, yeah, right, right. So, yes, and of course, there'll be leafleting done around town. If people are interested in helping out with leafleting,
mm-hmm.
A group of people are going to be meeting to do some neighborhood leafleting. We're trying to reach people in the neighborhood of Loudon Nelson who might not normally come to a thing like this, and we'll be getting together at 8 a.m. In the playground at Loudon Nelson Park to do some distributing of handbills on, kind of hang them on doorknobs.
That's 8 a.m. on
Saturday. This
Saturday.
Saturday.
That's
April 27th.
27th. That's actually day after tomorrow.
That's right. Yes, exactly. Well, it's coming up fast.
Yeah.
But, you know, people wanted to help out and do a little publicity on that. And then I'll be doing some leafleting at the Imagine Celebration. And
tell us a little bit about that, if you can. I've heard about it briefly. Maybe you can imagine there's something happening on Saturday, day after tomorrow as well. Right?
Yeah. Right, right. Lots of stuff going on.
That's happening at the Veterans Hall. It starts at
11 a.m.
Runs to 6. It's
right.
Sort of a benefit Doctors Without Borders, War and Peace art exhibit, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. Well,
so lots of culture and politics going on both Saturday and Wednesday.
And if people want to help you, Hank, is there a number they should call, or should they just show up at 8 a.m.? That's kind of a bit to ask for most
Well,
of
they can do. Actually, if people would like, I'll give my number. It's 421-0829 if people would like to help out in some way.
421-0829.
Yes, right.
Okay. We've been talking to Hank Milstein. Am I right on that one?
That's right, yes.
And Hank, you work with a local Communist Party?
That's right, yes.
As well as other progressive organizations?
Right, oh yeah. And actually, this is also sponsored by the Resource Center for Nonviolence, the Green Party of Santa Cruz, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and the Santa Cruz Peace Coalition.
That's correct.
So we've got a whole bunch of different organizations putting this on.
Hey, and we're not putting you on. We tell you we want you to come to this May 1st activity.
Absolutely.
Thanks for calling, Hank.
Okay, well, thank you.
Appreciate the help.
Have a great evening.
Bye-bye. And it's about 6:17 here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, a twice-weekly show where on Thursdays I come at you for 2 hours from 6 to 8, and then on Sundays it's 3.5 hours for those who can stomach it from 10 to 1:30. Lots of time to do lots of talking, lots of time to play lots of interviews, and I usually need every minute of it because got a lot of stuff to get out, and my organizational skills falter frequently, and I really appreciate when people help out. As, for example, we have, the two main projects I'm working on, of course, I encourage you to come to this May 1st Speak Out, this Labor Day celebration, but the other projects I'm involved in, too, we're going to be talking about. Again, before we leave the Labor Day celebration, I want to make a correction. Scott Kennedy is not responsible for the closure of parks after dark. That, in fact, was instituted by a council on the initiative of the police department and Parks and Rec under Jim Lang back in the 80s. In fact, Kennedy, in his early term, did try to fight for the rights of homeless people. It was about his first year and a half, in 1990-91, before he essentially surrendered to the business coalition that runs the downtown redevelopment agency, Conservative Democratic Party hacks, as I call them, and became a part of this unholy alliance that's running the downtown and the city now. But he did, in fact, for example, strive to stop the town clock from becoming a, quote, park under Jane Yokoyama, the mayor, who we used to call Jane Hokey Mama, because she used to this be this supposedly great minority liberal status she had, but she still made it was all up for keeping it a crime for people to be to sleep at night, even there was no affordable housing or legal places anywhere for them to sleep, and of course still isn't. She and others pushed to make the town clock a park at night, and the reason they wanted to make it a park, this is what is now the Peace Park controversy place, is because there was an ongoing protest of homeless folks who were getting ticketed night and day, but they didn't like ticketing them under the sleeping ban because it pointed out the criminality of the city's laws. Since they had no shelter for people, they were just saying it's a crime for you to exist at night if you sleep in the city of Santa Cruz. And people like Wanton Dave Jacobs and Robert Flory and Jetlag Joe Selinsky and myself and others supported that protest. Kennedy, to his credit, voted against turning it into a park, which made it so that after 1 o'clock at night, it's illegal to be in that area. But Kennedy did support making it illegal to be on the riverbanks, and he has supported the youth curfew, and he has supported the sleeping ban. So they got to say that about Councilmember Kennedy, who will be speaking at this event, the same event that I'll be speaking at.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hello. Yeah, about that Peace Park thing, you know, I was curious of one thing, and maybe you could like put some light on it for me. They I guess they want to use public funds in some way, but my thing is that would be tax money, and if that's tax money, public money, then why would they want money to go to their peace park from people that have violent jobs?
Hmm. Want me to answer?
You know what I mean?
Want me to answer that off the air? Or?
Yeah, off the air would be great.
Okay. They've actually engineered the resolution. And again, I haven't been following it that closely, but originally it was like $93,000 for this collateral damage statue where they were going to fly in bits of debris from different tragedies throughout the country, if not the world. And that's become a point of controversy, partially because it's going to be the Doug Rand Peace Park, or the there are folks who want it to be called that. I think it is being called that. I'm not entirely current on this. I actually arrested the night this was being discussed, so I didn't get the entire story. At Oral Communications, they first wouldn't let me talk, and then they didn't like my silent motion, so I didn't get much of a chance there to cover the whole situation. But in fact, as I understand it, most recently, they have made the major portion of the appropriation is to fix up the park, whether you want to call it a peace park, or Jane Yokoyama's Folly, or get rid of the homeless park, or whatever it is, because that's the reason that it was turned into a park. It was to make it more easier for police to eliminate people at night by simply citing them for just being in the park after dark. The main appropriation, I think it's $89,000 or $85,000, is for sort of fixing up the park. And then the rest of it is for these peace park type improvements. That's my hazy and perhaps inaccurate cursory reading of the Sentinel. You know, I mean, I haven't read the agendas, and I haven't really followed the debate very closely. My main thing about the Peace Park was I saw lots of folks, you know, urging the Peace Park be put in or opposing the Peace Park, but nobody wanted to demand the City Council take real action against the war, which I think is more to the point. And indeed, we had hundreds, if not thousands, of people taking action against the war a decade ago when Bush Sr. was about to bomb Iraq and did so with uranium-depleted weapons and cluster bombs and then created this decade of suffering with the embargo. But since then, other than a large outpouring, I guess, during the Rodney King Simi Valley jury verdict where the freeways were again taken over by folks, there hasn't been much in the way of really massive protest. And it's kind of, to an old, well, I guess I'm a liberal, but I'd like to be more, you know, a political observer like myself and a participant, that's depressing. You know, I'd like to see more going on here. I think we need it as the Constitution is sliced and diced under the Grand Mufti Ridge and his boss Bush and whoever Bush's bosses are, you know. Anyway, so the projects I'm working on have to do with criminalization of the poor, and I work on them with the group HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We're sort of brainstorming and hustling to get the Right to Sleep Summit together, and we've been talking about that on the air. I have for the last month or two. It is mainly a plan to get together activists for a summer campaign to end the sleeping ban, to see if we actually have the critical mass that might lead to a sufficiently intense, a dramatic, a persistent, and well-funded and well-organized campaign so that we can actually defeat the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance and more hopefully get the Pottinger guidelines implemented. Those are the guidelines that say not only is it legal to sleep, but it will be legal to engage in life-sustaining activity, such as being in a park after dark, such as having a fire in a place that it's safe to have a fire, but that they've ruled it's illegal to have fires, if you need to do so to sustain as a life-sustaining activity, as a necessity. That has been the consent decree in Miami, Florida, in the Pottinger case, hence the Pottinger guidelines, and it's still the case there. Unless there's a shelter bed available, then they can say you can't do these activities because we have shelter available and you can go to the shelter. And there's a whole another debate about that, whether homeless people should be allowed to run their own lives or be forced into shelters. But since there isn't any shelter, it isn't even a question, since the shelter as of April 15th is 39 spaces, for 39 people on the floors of churches, and they're always taken up. At least they were last year. That was the word from Karen Brock and then Mandy Hanks of the Homeless Services Center, and that was testified to under penalty of perjury in court. Then I think, you know, it's really quite clear that you can't criminalize people for doing what they need to do. And, of course, this is something, this message endlessly is repeated and is endlessly ignored by Mayor Crone, Councilmember Sugar, Councilmember Kennedy, Councilmember Premack, you name it, the whole gang of rascals. I don't just want to you know, single out the main three bad boys, the three amigos, as they call Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, or Porter, who betrayed his commitment to the Green Party, or Riley, who I invited on this show, by the way, and she may be listening in. She's, of course, was the person who promised and actually worked to end the sleeping ban, but once she neared power, she immediately turned around, perhaps too much input from Supervisor Marty Wormhout, and came out against the positions she had previously held. And it's illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz, thanks to her, because if she changed her mind and came out publicly on City Council for this, I think it would, that the rest of them would find a real hard time holding the anti-homeless line on this issue. But to her discredit, she is not. And I actually am going to read from a letter she wrote. Actually, I'm going to dig into my bag here. It's a letter she wrote way back in January of 1999, 27th of January. She sent it to City Council, and I got it out of the City Council files. And this was before she was a council member. This was right in the middle of the time when Catherine Byers had sidelined the drive to end the sleeping ban by setting up the task force to examine the camping ordinance. And we'll be getting to that in just a moment. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hey.
What cowardly rascals, what cowardly amigos they are, huh? They won't even call in and feebly attempt to prove you wrong.
Well, they don't have to. They can have me arrested at City Council and dragged out. That's their, and they can, you know, rule me out of order after 3 minutes, and they can avoid these issues. Unless, of course, the community challenges them in public or in the progress of the lawsuit, which I'm going to be talking about and encouraging everybody, you included, Uncle Ed, to, you know, essentially sign on for. This is the lawsuit in federal court that will hold the City Council accountable for at least letting the public speak. But what's happening out there?
Well, it's got a lot. I wanted to comment on the letters section of the Metro this week.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciated one by a Paul Franklin.
By who?
Paul Franklin.
Oh yes, Paul.
Yeah, in his letter, he mentions especially in these dark days of the U.S. military machine gone virtually out of control and a federal administration hell bent on rolling back as much of the Bill of Rights the citizens of this country will let them. And then there's another part. It's in context with that article from last week, the previous week, something calling the feeding the homeless is labeled stupid stuff like that. Are you aware of that?
You mean specifically, did Franklin say that in his story?
No, he didn't say that. He's rebutting. Some woman, I don't know if it was the woman that writes the news part, said that it was stupid stuff like that, feeding the homeless,
uh-huh,
the hungry, stupid things like that, something like that.
I read Paul's letter briefly, and I'm glad you're bringing it to my attention again. In fact, do you have it there?
Yes, I have his letter.
Why don't you read it aloud?
Okay. I appreciate the value of irony and humor, especially in these dark days of a U.S. military machine gone virtually out of control, and a federal administration hell-bent on rolling back as much of the Bill of Rights as the citizens of this country will let them. I was, however, disappointed to see the use of humor at the expense of caring people who devote long hours and hard and often thankless work. I refer, of course, to the news column of your April 17th issue where feeding the homeless is labeled stupid stuff like that, quote-unquote. I challenge you to clarify what exactly is stupid about feeding people who are hungry. Nothing, you say? This was merely a platform upon which to leap from to make fun of what it means to serve on certain boards of directors in Santa Cruz, ? For someone who has spent many hours gathering, preparing, the wind is blowing his paper,
that's
stoppage.
Okay.
For someone who has spent many hours gathering, preparing, and serving food to the hungry along with other Food.bombs volunteers, this platform is built upon our sweat and sore muscles. This is a good one. Mother Teresa was once quoted after a visit to the U.S. of A. that she had never seen such a poor country. Startling words from a woman who devoted her life to feeding and caring for the homeless and hungry in Calcutta, India. The poverty of spirit and compassion exhibited by your news reporter is disturbing and sad. Perhaps an assignment to the slums of India to research and write about the people there would offer some much-needed perspective on the value of life and the fundamental values of service to our fellow human beings.
Or perhaps the Homeless Services Center. She might spend some time out there.
Paul Franklin.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting you should bring up Paul, because you've heard me talk about him on the air.
Sure.
In another context. I mean, Paul not only writes good letters, and he's not only... He maintains the website for the Green Party. He publishes the Peace and Justice calendar in the center of the Santa Cruz Comic News. And for many years, he has worked very hard on Food Not Bombs, helping to, you know, as he said, cook and feed and organize it. And I've been a regular donor to Food Not Bombs, too, and a sometime worker and an occasional arrestee, you know.
Joe arrestee, yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of sad when people, you know, on the left kind of fall out, as Paul and I seem to have, and I'm always hopeful that there can be some cooler heads and warmer hearts that can sort of step in here. My you know, grievance with Paul, as I talked about it last time, was his insistence on excluding HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group that's, I think, been really... quite frankly, as helpful as Food Not Bombs, and although we work differently in trying to uphold the civil rights of homeless people, excluding us from his list of events.
That's terrible.
Which
played right into their hands, Robert.
Yeah, I think it's a mistake on his part, and I can't through ordinary channels get him to explain himself, or other than the fact that he feels pressured, no doubt.
Sure.
Will feel pressured having this matter discussed publicly on free radio, but I frankly don't know what else to do. I've approached him, I've called him, I've suggested other people who know him better than I to talk to him and see what his specific objections are. He doesn't get clear about it, he doesn't get specific, and I just think, you know, it's a bad decision, and I wouldn't let Mayor Crone get away with this kind of shit. I don't think I should let anybody get away with this kind of shit, and so, you know, you try quiet diplomacy. When that doesn't work, you know, you go public, and that's sort of what I've done. Although some have criticized it. I talked to Grant Wilson the other day, who's the funny and productive head of, or worker with, Art and Revolution, has done wonderful work in creating theater that dramatizes the big issues of our times, and even local big issues, which to me is very important. And Grant works with Paul Franklin on putting out the Peace and Justice calendar, and I understand he's, you know, He hasn't made a public statement on this at all, but I've been trying to get him to, you know, to say something about, let's not all agree to suppress the name of an organization and what it's doing,
because
right. I think that's a bad precedent, not just bad for HUF. HUF can get publicity elsewhere, but bad to allow that kind of thing to happen. And I'm still trying, encouraging him to go public, and or else to persuade. Persuade Paul to act otherwise, and he has not been able to do that, or has chosen not to do that, or something between the two. So anyway, it's a problem.
I'm just having a hopeful thought that maybe he'll show up for the to the homeless summit. So.
Paul and Grant are both invited to the summit.
Good.
And of course,
you're not excluding them then, Bob.
Certainly, no,
oh,
never
okay.
Will. I mean, no, even everybody's invited to the summit, including you know, Fuhrer Crone and
yeah,
you know, real.
And they're invited always, as usual, to call in, but they just won't call in. Why is that?
They just won't call in. Also, I should tell people that tomorrow, the Peace Day is doing its usual protesting, kind of its peace walk at Water and Ocean Streets, where there's some great signs. People are protesting the war, Bush's war in Afghanistan, the bombing in the Middle East, you know, the attacks, the potential attacks on Iraq and Colombia. I mean, it's all part of the same absurd and evil foreign policy.
And let's not forget the 2,500 to 5,000 children that have died every month since 1991 as fathers of vileness due to the United States sanctions. Those are United Nations numbers that have died every month, 2,500 to 5,000 every month till present, thanks to the United States sanctions.
And this is going to be dramatized by people getting a lot of support, I found, last Friday. People are honking in favor. Very few people are critical
good.
Of us. And Paul Franklin is there with the rest of us. I'm sure he's been a much more of a regular participant than I at those events. So maybe we'll see you and other listeners
not
there.
I'm too chicken shit, Robert.
I'll protect you.
Oh, you big, strong man, you.
Hey, baby.
See ya.
All righty. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz still, believe it or not. This is your host, Bathrop's Peer Robert Norris, and I'm actually going to try to get my favorite attorney, Catnip Kate Wells, on the line and see if I can do a quick update from her on what's shaken in the halls of justice, where the only justice is in the halls, as we like to say. Catnip Kate Wells.
Hey.
This is your...
Robert.
Yeah, it's me, and of course, Free Radio calling in to see just what kind of shenanigans the folks in power are up to.
That's the name of the cop of the day.
Well, I know that you had some rather strong words for Capitola's Officer Murphy in the last show, but what's shaken? Anything interesting?
Well, I guess you know, if you're not too modest, your lawsuit is.
Hey.
A pretty hot topic these days.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's, I think, been all too obvious that the city council has decided that they are better than the people they serve, and know better what to, you know, the irony of all of this is they complain constantly about people talking over and over again about the same things, and, you know, what I want to say to them is, well, okay, why don't you address these issues, and maybe they'd stop talking about them, you know?
You know, exactly so, and I also think it's important that, like, I was at the council meeting two nights ago, and Scott Scott Graham was there. He's a old-time council watcher.
Right.
And he made a proposal to council that he's made before, which is that state legislators and federal legislators get like a minute or two to talk to the public, and then they have to move on. But the city council can talk for hours and hours and hours, but they can they restrict the public's input to, well, even less than 3 minutes. Crone regularly is cutting people back to 2 minutes.
I did find it a little ironic. I tuned in for a short time on television the other night at the council meeting, only to listen to them painstakingly deciding whether or not there would be, you know, palm trees or, you know, what kind of trees they were going to plant along Mission Street. And, you know, it's the irony is just so, it's just so awful when you think about the fact that people are dying, you know, of hypothermia and being beat up and I mean, and they won't spend even a minute talking about it, and they're willing to dwell on whether or not we're going to have an elm tree or a palm tree on Mission Street.
Well, this was sort of similar to what they were doing around Camp Paradise last year. They were all up in arms about the prospects of Camp Paradise as getting access to a campsite in the Poganip, because this might in some way upset the, what I call them, habitat environmentalists. They're concerned only with the environment insofar as it doesn't affect, it affects human beings whose income is over, what is it, $50,000 a year?
Right.
I'm not quite sure what their dividing line is.
No, either.
And you actually went to city council. If people want to see you, they can see you speak on video on www.santacruz.indymedia.org. That's the same site that will have a video record of my arrest for raising my arm silently in a Heil Crone salute. And that, I guess, so upset you and Attorney David Beauvais that you once more, in spite of your immensely overcrowded schedule, decided you were willing to take the case to federal court.
Well, it wasn't the salute that upset us. It was the subsequent arrest, which you know, again, as I said that evening when we served them with the lawsuit, that, you know, the situation is pregnant with irony when you think about the fact that they just confirmed the very thing that you were accusing them of by arresting you and having you removed.
Well, it's kind of ironic because they didn't arrest Thomas Levitt, who raised his arm at city council in a similar salute.
Right.
And yet, of course, it's like they have a slow learning curve. That's what I notice. I mean, what they tried, they ordered out of council chambers James Ney, the man who served them with the lawsuit,
right,
because they felt it was inappropriate for him to serve a lawsuit during oral communications. In fact, you can say whatever you want and present whatever documents you want to city council during oral communications. I mean, that's completely legal,
uh-huh,
and actually it's quite traditional. That's what's done. Many people don't have documents. But they decided, oh, we better not arrest this guy for giving, this next guy, Thomas, for giving a Nazi salute. And in fact, when I gave a Nazi salute at the last council meeting 2 days ago, for some strange reason, they didn't have me arrested either, even though I saw no change in their written decorum policy. What do you make of that, Kate?
Well, I would say that they're not, they're probably under instructions from the city attorney at this point to lay low about these issues. Another issue that I'd kind of like to address here is, and one that I'd kind of like to get a ball rolling to start to suggest to the city that they have an attorney who is employed by the city to do the city's work. This BS about hiring a private attorney firm, which Barisoni is a private attorney who works on an hourly basis for the city, is bullshit. I mean, they have no incentive to settle any of these cases. I have cases that are running on and on and on, and of course that just fattens their pocket. They're thrilled. The more work the better for them. And meanwhile, you know, the city council as far as I'm concerned, if they were playing with their own money and gambling on whether or not they were going to win a lawsuit, that's up to them if they want to do that. But they're not playing with their own money. They're playing with the taxpayers' money. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, that's just an outrage.
Now, getting back to this lawsuit that you are taking, you and David Beauvais, and I guess it's already been filed as of March 26th, but there's another chapter coming up soon. The city responded to your 8-page lawsuit with a 197-page document. I mean, what was that all about?
Well, you know, I guess since they have to pay our attorney fees in the end, I guess they figure that maybe we needed money or something.
I see.
I don't know. It's astounding to me, you know.
What kind of arguments did they present that might justify having a person arrested who silently stood by the side of the room, raised his arm briefly, and then put it down?
Oh, they're citing legislative immunity. The same old tired arguments that that they always raise in these issues. The problem is it's just flat out not going to fly. I'm very confident that we're going to prevail in this because
even though you didn't get Judge Ware as you'd hoped.
Even though we didn't get Judge Ware,
mm-hmm.
Judge White was the one who issued the injunction against them taking down the peace sign. The cops were taking down the peace sign.
On the Caltrain overpasses,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Amy Courtney's and Cassandra Brown's case.
Yeah, so Judge Ware Judge White has a good history, and so and this is just such a basic issue, you know,
Have you ever taken this kind of a case before, Kate, where you've actually been suing a city council for some behavior of a member of the public, an arrest of that person? Is this a new kind of new territory for you?
I don't believe I've ever. I mean, certainly have sued council members. I mean, I have sued them on behalf of David Silva.
And you actually won that case. It's settled, as I understand.
Well, that was his prior case.
Yeah, the case where Sergeant Andy Crane threw him against a pillar.
Exactly, but then we had a videotape of that.
That was nice. Well, we have a videotape of this one, too.
That's true. We do have a videotape of this one as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
of course, I didn't get thrown against a pillar, so I suppose I should be grateful, or perhaps I should have hoped the baker would have been a little more violent in his behavior. The sergeant who arrested me.
Yeah, well, that's all right. You were subjected to enough humiliation and being arrested, and I think it's very telling the fact that when you asked him why you were being arrested, he said, Well, I'm not sure, but I think it's a trespass.
Which, of course, I wasn't charged with.
Right.
Well, what about this? The question, I mean, you're looking, let me say this first. What's the timeline? These federal cases take a while, these civil lawsuits, and then the state cases even longer, of course. But what is likely to happen next in this lawsuit? I know that we're not only looking for damages for this one incident, but you're looking for a broader, and I am too, for a broader response from the court that will tell the city council what?
We're asking for equitable relief, which means we're asking for a permanent injunction against the enforcement of these so-called rules of decorum. That would permanently enjoin them from threatening to remove people who were saying things that they didn't want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite clearly the case right now. So that's the impact will be that they still can ignore what we're saying, and they can still turn their head the other way and busy themselves with their paperwork while we're speaking. But
they can't throw us out.
They can't arrest us and throw us out. And
can they interrupt us?
No, they're not allowed to do that now.
Well, they do it anyway.
I know they do it anyway.
And I guess we're going to seek an injunction to stop them from interrupting people while speaking. I noticed that I have the decorum requirements here, and they're actually in the Exhibit A that you're presented to the federal judge. And the current decorum rules state, while the council is in session, all persons shall preserve order and decorum. Any person making personal, impertinent, or slanderous remarks, or becoming boisterous, shall be barred by the presiding officer from further attendance at said meeting unless permission is for continued attendance granted by a majority vote. And then further on it says, any person in the audience who uses boisterous or profane language or language tending to bring the council or any council member into contempt, or any person who interrupts and refuses to keep quiet or take a seat in order to do so by the presiding officer or otherwise disrupts the council's of the proceedings of the council. It seemed to me that Councilmember Fitzmaurice may have fit into this this little
it's quite clear picture. From the videotape that he's the only one who disrupted the meeting that night that you were arrested.
Yet no one arrested him. Now, you think this was perhaps an oversight on the part of Sergeant Baker?
I think probably it was an oversight. Yeah, another telling fact was that Sergeant Hennig was looking right at you. Sergeant Baker was looking right at you when you gave the salute and didn't pay any attention to it whatsoever. So it was clear to him that this wasn't any kind of a crime at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's insanity. I served for 14 years on the school board in SoCal and was called all kinds of nasty names. And what I learned after being so long on as a public servant on a governing body that, you know, there was a lot more to be learned from my critics than there was to be learned from those who were up there to praise me. And that's just something that these people need to figure out.
Now, what happens next? I mean, I guess you go back to court. You have to go back into court on the 30th with an answer to the city's 196-page dismiss all this document.
Yeah, they're trying to get it dismissed, and in the meantime, we're trying to get our injunctive relief motion filed, which I'm sure you have been asking your listeners to, anyone who has been subjected to this kind of treatment or has observed someone being subjected to this kind of treatment by the city council, we would like you to contact us because we're going to have to submit declarations of people who have been treated this way. And all of you who want to get involved, and that should be everyone who cares about their right to speak, we appreciate you getting in touch with Robert.
Yeah, I would appreciate that, too. We're talking to attorney Kate Wells. Still there, Kate?
Yes, I'm here.
Finally, the question is, I mean, injunctive relief, if it comes, assuming that we file next week or the week after, what's the usual time frame when they make those decisions?
Well, we can ask for preliminary injunction, which is like a temporary restraining order, which the judge would hear it and hopefully issue the injunction pending a full hearing on the matter.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the time frame? You know, as soon as we get it together and we have enough declarations and we feel comfortable that that we have enough information to go forward,
so
we will.
The sooner you want the city held to account, the sooner we will proceed once we get these declarations in.
Absolutely.
And that doesn't mean you have to have been arrested or even seen someone arrested. If you've seen a situation where the council shut down someone in one way or another, do get in touch with me at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we'll determine if they were doing so in violation of their council rules, for example.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's what we need. When your testimony can be important.
Right.
Now, if we get our declarations in and so forth, and I mean when we get our declarations in, will we be calling these council members into court as witnesses?
I'm not sure. Eventually we will be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
so they'll have to answer publicly for what they've done.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I know that Fitzmaurice had to answer publicly for what he did when he had us barred from the city council offices a year and a half ago.
Right.
And he lost that injunction even in local state court.
Right. Right. Yeah, they will definitely be forced to defend their actions. And I can't wait to see it. But it just so epitomizes the arrogance of this governing body. You know, they feel they're above not only us, but they're above the law. They don't have to follow the First Amendment because they're the governing body and they've been elected to do this. I mean, you know, these people are public servants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are there to serve us.
Now, what about in the interim? Let's suppose the next council meeting, before anything happens in court, Mayor Crone directs someone to leave, and the person says, "No, I feel I have a right to be here." And then the Mayor Crone says, "Well, we're going to have you arrested." Theoretically, could a member of the public turn to a police officer quietly to the side and say, "I'd like to file a citizen's arrest against Mayor Crone for this or that crime?"
Well, your hypothetical is pretty vague. You know, it mm-hmm. obviously it would depend on what the person was doing. You know, I mean, if they'd stripped naked or done something disruptive.
Right, but if they were engaging in non-disruptive behavior and they were told to leave the room, I guess telling someone to leave the room. If I tell you to leave the room and I don't do so in a threatening fashion, that's free speech. But if I tell you to leave the room in a fashion that indicates I'm going to have a bunch of thugs throw you out if you don't go, does that constitute a crime if you're in any sense, if you're denying me the right to be in a public meeting and I haven't disrupted the meeting?
Well, sure, that would be a violation of the Brown Act.
Right, at least. Plus the First Amendment, one would think.
As well as the First Amendment if you were in the process of engaging in some sort of speech at the time.
And the reason I ask this is because, as you know, I kind of showed you this story that Becky Johnson wrote for Street Spirit about this activist David Boosh in Santa Monica, who, when he is told he has to leave a restaurant simply because they don't like the sign around his neck that says unhoused, he has money, he's clean, he's not being abusive, they tell him they're just not going to serve him, and they arrest him for trespass, his response is to demand that the LAPD, and successfully demand, that they take a citizen's arrest on his part against the individuals who are throwing him out for, I think it's making a false police report.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're claiming that, or I guess it's false arrest, but I mean, is it possible to engage in those kinds of responses both at city council and say against merchants who are making, who are ordering you arrested for things where there's not probable cause to believe you've committed a crime?
Well, of course, but then you have to figure that, I mean, this is something Jerry Henry did on a regular basis at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. He would demand that they arrest the people who were harassing him, and they just simply refused to arrest them or even cite these people.
Yet, I have in front of me...
I know, there's... it?
Penal Code Section 142A, which says any police peace officer who has the authority to receive or arrest a person charged with a criminal offense and willfully refuses to receive or arrest such person shall be punished by a fine of not exceeding $10,000. That sounds like a felony, or by imprisonment in state prison. Yet you say this isn't enforced or it isn't used?
No, it's not enforced, unfortunately.
I see.
And then there's also the out that they have that was used in your situation of the music when you asked for to make a citizen's arrest because of complaints about the hosts where they went ahead and cited him, then immediately canceled out the ticket, saying that it wasn't didn't rise to the level of a crime.
Right, but at least they took the citation, so they met that condition. They didn't violate their law.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed to me like when I requested of Officer Brandt and then Sergeant Baker that they arrest Mayor Crone, that is to say they present him with my complaint and they require him to fill it out and then they can dismiss it, that's fine. And their refusal to do that is in fact a violation of a penal code section here.
It is. It is.
And you are prepared to take these individuals into custody tomorrow, Kate? Sheriff Kate
well,
Wells?
Well, the problem is that they can choose who it is that they want to prosecute.
Right.
And the district attorney's office and the city attorney's office is the final say on whether or not that's going
to
happen.
Are there any civil consequences to individuals engaging in, you know, criminal behavior and then not being prosecuted for it? I mean, or is the remedy to go after the DA, I guess?
And you can't go after the DA. The DA is absolutely immune from damages. That's, you know, don't get me started on that.
Oh, dear. So there is no remedy at all, other than the only solution is revolution? That sort of thing?
That's about it. That's about it. Yeah. No, the prosecutors have absolute immunity. They can make these decisions unilaterally. I don't know if you talked to Quigg tonight.
Have not.
Okay. But, he's got a case where a neighbor came onto the property and literally stole a piece of farm equipment and not only used that farm equipment but broke the farm equipment. They made a report to the police about it. The sheriff's department came out. The guy admitted that he had done that. What he had done was a felony. And we just found out today that they're refusing to. The district attorney is refusing to file.
Wait a minute. You're still talking about Kate Canales' office.
Uh-huh.
But do you think that Bob Lee would do the same? Or?
I'm hoping not.
Uh-huh.
I'm hoping that things will be different. I mean, heaven knows that the Canales reign has been extremely political,
mm-hmm.
and politically motivated, and it's you know, I have very little question that the decision not to prosecute was made on the basis of the fact that this person is a friend of Richard Quigley's.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, the problem is they have this, this basic absolute immunity from any kind of civil suit, and talk about being above the law.
So both police, I guess, can theoretically be sued, but not district attorneys, huh?
Police can be sued. They have what's called a qualified immunity, which means that if a reasonable officer in the shoes of that person would have done the same thing, that then they're immune.
Mm-hmm.
So they do have immunity for some things. I mean, they even have absolute immunity for some things. For instance, I think I've said this before on the air, but maybe you have some new listeners who haven't heard this outrageous little bit of information, and that is that an officer can get up on the stand and lie intentionally and maliciously with a specific intent of getting you falsely convicted of a crime, and they are absolutely immune from damages. From civil damages. You cannot sue them. This is a U.S. Supreme Court case by the name of Briscoe versus LaHue, and they use the oxymoronic logic in this case, saying, "Well, in order to get at the truth, we have to let them lie." It's the most outrageous thing. It's a 1989 U.S. Supreme Court case. And many lawyers don't even know this case exists.
The lies will set you free, eh? Or the lies will set them free.
Yeah, right. The lies will set them free. So, you know, it's a, you know, I've said this before and I'll say it again, but immunity, I think, is one of the roots of most of the evil in our government right now, and that's because they know they have these immunities, and, I mean, judges are absolutely immune, prosecutors are absolutely immune, and they know it, and they act accordingly. You know,
as a defense attorney, and you're one of the few defense attorneys that actually, is it fair to say that you're one of the few who takes lawsuits against police officers in this county?
Not defense. That's prosecution.
I'm sorry.
That's plaintiff.
Right. One of the few attorneys who civilly goes after...
Yeah,
you're defending the rights of the public, as far as I'm concerned, when you do that.
I don't know anybody else who does it, locally. You know, certainly there's John Burris up in Oakland, and, you know, there are other well-known civil rights attorneys. Tony Serra does civil rights work, that sort of thing. But locally, and judging from the number of calls I get from all over the state, and right now I have cases pending against officers in Placer County, Sacramento County, L.A. County, Fresno County. So the fact that I'm getting all of these calls leads me to believe that there aren't very many attorneys at all doing this. And that would probably stem from the fact that it's hard to be a civil rights attorney when we have very few civil rights.
Now, do you find this has significant consequences in terms of your ability to operate locally as an attorney? I know that you seem to be on pretty good terms with judges and opposing attorneys, people in the DA's office, sheriffs, and so forth.
Well, I think probably the most graphic example of how it affects me is what happened to the Santa Cruz Cannabis Pharmaceuticals when we tried to function within the city limits.
This was the club that actually had four or five times as many people as Wham,
right?
And which is still operating, although I guess in a technically a sub rosa manner, I guess.
Right.
And you were unable to continue because zoning restrictions were laid against you, in spite of all the hoopla about allowing medical marijuana, right?
Right. Yeah, they basically zoned us out of existence, whereas other people who were, let's put it this way, had the favor of the city council, were allowed to continue